Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. ABC begins the second full night of Summer Fun and Games Wednesday, bringing back Match Game and bringing in a pair of iconic favorites, Pressure Luck and Card Sharks. Executive producers John Quinn and Jack Martin join me next at Internet Radio exclusive from Los Angeles. One day later, CBS All Access kicks off Season 2 of Strange Angel, the unusual dramatic tale that mixes science, faith, and the occult. We'll connect later this hour with creative executive producer Mark Heyman and executive producer David DeGloglio. And back in the 1980s, Nightflight was one of late night TV's most unique music landmarks. This decade, Nightflight offers 24/7 as a subscription venture, reaching viewers through smart TV sets and TV-connected products. Nightflight's navigator, Stuart Shapiro, comes by next hour, and will also give you an opportunity to subscribe to his service through our classic trivia question of the week. Also ahead, BET smartens up breaking news on that front, Tony Award viewership, Vice News Tonight at Crossroad, and again, our classic trivia question. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 3 free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A great Monday afternoon to you and all. 64 radio degrees here in the New York metro area. And again, we welcome you to Football Live Television. We have a jam-packed 90 minutes in store for you, and we can get right to it. And the show is better when you interact with us. So pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anywhere. You're catching us across the country and around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And our chat room is in business. 2 people already in the room. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So either way, go to chat room. You will be interactive with us. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk or Speaker screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. John Quinn and Jack Martin from Pressure Luck and Card Sharks coming Wednesday night on ABC Summer Fun and Games lineup. Join us live from L.A. after these news notes. Our first one is a late-breaking one. BET will premiere a 24/7 programming venture this fall. That's according to a Wall Street Journal report filed earlier this afternoon. BET Plus is the name, with the format that makes the first run of library content playing through smart TV sets and TV-connected devices. Viewers will be charged a monthly fee for taking the service. Also, WSJ details, entertainment entrepreneur Tyler Perry will be among the first-run content suppliers to BET Plus and have equity in the venture. At this hour, Viacom, BET, and Perry have not confirmed the formation of BET Plus. However, in the last half hour, we have learned from various entertainment news sources that at least 2 first-run shows will run on BET Plus. One is The First Wives Club from Tracy Oliver, the original was run on Paramount Network that was given to BET a few months ago. And the other is one of the productions that Will Packer is doing for BET. If you get more detail before the end of the program, we will let you know. The Tony Awards reached a 5-year viewership low last night. The CBS telecast placed 3rd among the broadcast networks ahead of Fox and the CW and drew less than 5.5 million viewers. When James Corden hosted the event 4 years ago, 8.7 million people tuned in, and last year about 6.5 million. NBC Stanley Cup Game 6 was the leader among the broadcast networks last night in the ratings, followed by the premiere of Celebrity Family Feud Season 4 on ABC. And the relationship between HBO and Vice's news programming will end this September. After 3 years, HBO will drop Vice News Tonight, the pre-primetime Monday through Thursday anchorless newscast. Vice management says the series will move to another channel or platform with an announcement where promised by mid-summer. Earlier, HBO canceled Vice's prize-winning weekly magazine format after 6 years late Friday nights. It ran for an hour each Friday. We'll have news of pickies at the top of the next hour. But right now, joining us live from Los Angeles, the key executive producers from the new reboots of Pressure Luck and Card Sharks, right from 8 to 10 this Wednesday night on ABC. We welcome in John Quinn and Jack Martin. John and Jack, welcome aboard.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure. John, we'll start with you. There's a lot in common between the two of you working on these shows. And the first is, you are both working on reboots of very iconic game shows. Both of you have had experience, I know, with new shows like Deal or No Deal. In your case, Sean, Celebrity Name Game. What's it been like to go from doing a new show you create from scratch to a show that has been, in case of Press Your Luck, so iconic for big bucks and whammies?
Go ahead, John.
John, go ahead.
Simon, I'll take that. This is Jack. You know, it was
okay,
great.
Yeah.
You know, we had such a – there were so many versions of the car tracks, you know, through the 70s and 80s. And just taking that great basic format and making it feel more prime time and just elevating it with what is really a simple game of higher or lower, but taking it and obviously bringing in fantastic contestants and Joel McHale, who is just the best, helped with that. A different look, a different feel, and just continuing the fun.
Mm-hmm. And John, what about Press Your Luck? Again, very iconic game show and one that, a lot of people are looking forward to seeing. John, are you there? Let me see if we get John back. In the meantime, Jack, let's stay with you, because another thing that
sure.
both of you have in common is you are working with people who have never done a game show before as a host. In your case, it's Joel McHale, and while he's had a lot of experience both as an actor and also hosting The Soup for many years on E!, this is a new thing for him. How did you bring him along?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you got to give a lot of credit to Joel. He came in, you know, just ready to work. I mean, we definitely, you know, once you know the game show mechanics of how the game works, your personality can really come out. And Joel came in and just really worked his tail off to learn how the show worked. And once, you know, he got that down, you know, the Joel McHale of it could all come out, because you have to know the logistics of a game show before you can, you know, be funny and be yourself and interact with contestants. So he really put in the work in pre-production.
All right, I think John is finally with us, so let's get John back on the line here. John, are you there?
Hello, Simon. I'm sorry. I'm not very good with technology, apparently.
That's okay. No problem. And it's great to have you. I was mentioning at the start of the segment that both you and Jack have a couple of things in common with this project. One is that, like Jack has done shows he's created from scratch, like Deal or No Deal, you also came from doing something from scratch, Celebrity Name Game, and Candy Crush. We had you on last year when you did that show for CBS. But both of you are now doing reboots of very iconic game shows. So what's it been like for you to do a show that people remember very fondly for big bucks and no whammies?
Well, I think first it is different in a lot of ways. I think, first of all, I felt a lot more pressure on this show probably because I felt like I was handed the keys to the castle. It's an iconic game, obviously, Press Your Luck, that people love. I feel like it almost has a cult following. So my first order of business is to make sure I didn't screw it up. I think we want to pay homage to the original and give the audience the show that they know and love, but make it an hour show where the second half is a bonus game, just trying to up it and just trying to update it. Obviously, the money is bigger, but different changes for an hour-long format because ours is not 2 half-hours. It's 1 full hour. So we updated things there, but the entire time I would go back and watch the old show because I wanted to also keep it true to the heart of the show that was so successful in the 80s.
And like Jack with Card Sharks, you are working with someone who has never done television really in a big way, but also never done television as a game show host, and that's Elizabeth Banks.
Elizabeth Banks on Press Your Luck, yeah. I mean, she was spectacular, and she had never done – she'd hosted a few things, so she knew what she was doing. But she's a dynamo. She's a producer. She's a director. She's an actor. She wanted to rehearse. She wanted to get it down. So by the time we got to studio, she knew the game intimately and was able to jump right in, have fun with the contestants, and basically control the game.
I want to welcome another person into our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If you have a question or comment for our guests, put in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. Jack, one reason why ABC has done so well with the Summer Fun and Games lineup, which now is fourth season, and did very well last night with Family Feud coming back, Pyramid, which I've seen the taping of, which people will see later on in the summer, as well as The Tell the Truth, is that for the most part, it keeps the game the way we love to see it. whether it's Pyramid or Family Feud, you know, don't screw the game up in terms of the format. How do you approach Card Sharks?
Yeah, I think we definitely want to do the same thing, you know, as far as having, you know, the big cards that everybody knows about, the higher or lower of it all. But we also incorporated, we really wanted this to take this out of a studio feel. And really, the goal of this, you know, Scott St. John and I are the EPs on this, and we wanted to make it feel like you were going into the Aria Casino or a Cosmopolitan Casino, just a high-end Vegas show where Joel is kind of, for lack of a better word, you know, the casino owner, like an Andy Garcia out of the Ocean's 11 movie, welcoming you to his casino. We did add in, like we have, when people are gambling, instead of them just saying, you know, they'll show, well, I'm going to, you know, $100 here, $100 there, we added chips, so you can actually feel, we want our contestants to be able to feel the money. And when they have $175,000 sitting in front of them, a lot like Vegas, you know, if you ever bet $175,000, it's real easy to say. It's really hard to push those chips into the higher or lower part of our board. So just keeping true to the original format, but, you know, updating, upgrading, and making it more fun for the viewer and the contestant.
And John, what about Press Your Luck? Especially, as I said, people, I know that the whammies are back. Let's get out of the way. The whammies are back. And the original animation I think you're using, the Savage Steve Holland animation, that was originally done for the original daytime show.
Yeah, I mean, we're not using his same animations. We are using a company called Midnight Sherpa. But for us on this side, that was one of the most important parts of this show, the whammies. I think there are people that – lots of people remember the whammies if they don't even remember Press Your Luck. If you'll go to people and say, hey, Press Your Luck, they're like, what's that? You say, you know, the show with the whammies, everybody knows that. So to us, it was extremely important. So our design of them, we did not want to jump too far away from the original. So it almost has a retro feel and look to them. We also are using a good amount of the old whammies, the ones that we basically redid them, but to look the exact same, the ones from the original show. We went through all 85 that were originally made and picked a handful that we thought were the most iconic and the most fun. So we use those, and then we also have a heck of a lot of new ones too that, you know, that feel the same as the old show. We did not want to drive away too far from that. We wanted people to be reminded. I mean, people love the whammy, so if it's not broken, don't fix it. So we stayed in the same ballpark when it came to that.
Press Your Luck and Card Sharks. They are the new attractions of ABC's Summer Fun and Games lineup, and they premiere on Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, followed by Match Game. And tomorrow night, you can see a preview of Press Your Luck right after The Bachelorette on your local ABC station. We've got the executive producers of both programs all in the same segment, John Quinn and Jack Martin from Press Your Luck and Card Sharks, respectively. The both live from Los Angeles this half hour on tomorrow will be televised. Coming up, I'm with you live from NY. 64 degrees at the top of the hour, raining all day long today into the night. And we're happy you're aboard, whether you're catching us on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for our guest, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. There's one more Summer Fun Games new attraction coming up on ABC. It's called Holy Moly. Whether you play miniature golf or not, you have never seen a miniature golf course like the one that Steph Curry and crew have designed. Friday on Tomorrow Televised, Wes Denning, the executive producer with Steph Curry, will be our first guest. And also, we'll meet a former cable system owner named Michael Wilner. At one point, he headed Insight Communications, one of the top 10 cable system operators in the country. Now he's worked with cable operators and the world of mobile, too. You'll find out all about his company and his thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going. Michael Wilner, and we'll also have, again, Wes Denning from Holy Moly on ABC until Friday, 3:30 Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jack, one of the fun things about Card Sharks was that you got to know the contestants through those questions, because the questions really invited the contestants to sort of, not just put their thinking caps, but also to inquire about, you know, their opinions about various things. I'm wondering if that is still part of the format.
100%. Most of our questions are, you know, we polled 100 baristas, you know, and asked them a question. What's great about our contestants is, you know, they take that question and they definitely, you know, bring personal experience to it before they answer it. It's not just a guessing game or a trivia. It's really, you know, taking into their personal experience and what they think people would think. So you do really get to know a lot about our contestants through the questions.
And, of course, John, you have the questions on Press Your Luck. That's how the contestants earn the spins.
Yeah, that element of that is obviously still there. Unlike the first version of the show, where it was four questions in the first round and four questions in the second round, it's now three questions in the first round and four questions in the second round. And I think there is a really good place for Elizabeth Banks, the host, to jump in, chat with them about their answers, have fun with them based on what they say, whether they get one wrong or right. She's very good at jumping in and chatting with them after the questions. So I feel like a lot of their personality came out through that. And then obviously once you get to the spin rounds, all heck breaks loose and they're screaming and going crazy and yelling big bucks, no whammies, chatting with each other. I think one of the things from the original, I don't feel like in the original, you got to know the contestants as well. In this one, we tried to really bring them out as much as we could. And also one of the contestants goes on to the bonus game where you really get to know that person as they take up, you know, a full hour of television.
And talk about that, because that is a brand new element of Press Your Luck. And by the way, you made a nice segue, John, into this question. So far, most of the ABC game shows have been 2 half-hour segments put into 1 hour. But it sounds like with Press Your Luck, that's different, where you have one game for the full hour. And I'm wondering, and I'm definitely going to you and see whether that's the case with Card Trust or not. But explain, John, how the Press Your Luck bonus round works.
Sure. The one person who wins out of the three, win whatever they win in that front game, they get no matter what. They get to keep it. They're going home with that no matter what. Now they go on to the bonus game where they face the whammy one-on-one. We changed the set. The three-person bunker is gone, and then there's just one platform with one podium and one button. And they go through a series of rounds where the big bucks jump up every round from 10,000, 15, 25, 50, 75, all the way to 100,000. And the contestant is allowed to leave at different points. So for the first round, you got to take 5 spins, and then you can leave with your winnings, or you can stay and press your luck. Just like the front game, anytime you get a whammy, you lose all your money. 4 whammies put you out of the bonus game. So it's a roller coaster of up and down. You might be up, and you might lose your cash and prizes, and then you have to build it back up. But it's easier to build it back up the deeper you go in the game, because the big bucks become gigantic, all the way up to $100,000 if you stay that long. We've also added an element of personalizing the prizes for the contestants. There's obviously prizes in the front game, just like the original. But now in the bonus game, all the prizes are personalized to that individual contestant who's playing. So we keep, as the game moves on, we put up more expensive and bigger personalized prizes. And by seeing these personalized prizes, I feel like you get to know the contestants even better through what they want, through, you know, their dreams, the type of trips or prizes or what have you that they want. You learn about the contestants.
Now, Jack, with Card Sharks, I believe there's also a new bonus round. Again, like Press Your Luck, is it going to be one game for the full hour, or is it going to be 2 half-hour games?
Yeah, no, it's definitely it's 1 hour. We start with 2 contestants, and they play head-to-head on a 10-card, 5-question front game where they're just trying to win the race. And one of those contestants wins the front. They win $10,000 that they then take into the final round, or they.
Hello?
Maximum of their whole pot. Sorry, Simon?
Go ahead, Jack. You're on.
So they can wager a minimum of 1,000 to their max. If they bust out, they leave with nothing. And after the 6th card, they can walk away with their money, or they can bet a minimum of half to go for upwards of $500,000 per show.
John, go back to talking about Elizabeth Banks and how she got up to speed, because you had the opportunity to have Craig Ferguson do Fully Named Game, won the Emmy Award for his work. And you worked with a lot of good people on that show, I might add, too. Contrast working with Craig, because he had the interview background from the Late Late Show that he could apply to doing Celebrity Name Game, and then bringing Elizabeth up to speed doing Press Your Luck.
Yeah, I mean, they're both total pros in different ways, I suppose. Craig, you know, having the background of talk, and I don't think for his talk shows, he liked to be very prepared. He liked to really go off the cuff. So we'd kind of just say, here's the contestants' names, and he goes, I don't want to know anything else. Let's go. So prepping Craig, besides going over game material with him, was quite minimal. Elizabeth was kind of somewhere in the middle. We practiced a lot in conference room run-throughs out of the gate because Pressure Luck's a very tricky show. There's a lot of traffic cop you must place, and Peter Schmarka made it look effortless, and I think Elizabeth does too. We did a lot of rehearsals, so she got in her head. But then once we got there, she wanted to just simply be prepped on the contestants and what was going on, and she was off the cuff, just like Ferguson always was. You know, we weren't feeding her lines or anything like that. She just went, and she was very personal with the contestants, and I think she comes across as very natural.
Hmm. And Jack, you worked with Scott St. John with Howie Mandel on Deal or No Deal, and Howie became a terrific game show host. Of course, he's now doing the new version, which will be back with new episodes later this month on CNBC. In fact, NBC gave it a special primetime play last night at from 7 to 8 before the Stanley Cup game. But now you have Joel McHale, and like Howie, Joel comes from the world of comedy. He's very flip. We saw that with The Soup. He's very off the cuff, too. What was it like working with him to sort of develop his game show persona?
Yeah, I mean, the reason ABC wanted Joel McHale is for him to be Joel McHale, which he can't help but doing, which is fantastic. But we prepped him on, he wanted to know the most he possibly could about all our contestants, like Elizabeth and John. Joel really came in knowing the game well. So he wanted to be able to, you know about these contestants, listen to them, you know, how they were rationalizing their answers, and also be able to pull something out that he knew about them already, which was great. It was really, it's really a great three-person conversation between Joel and the two contestants as they're going through the five questions of the front game.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Jack, was there any thought about one of the charms of the original Card Sharks that Jim Perry hosted was the opening poem where viewers could send in the poem. They were acknowledged that the poem was used on the air. They also acknowledged the local station they were watching the show on. Was there any thought about bringing the poems back?
Poems are back. Poems are back at the top of every show. You know, most of those are generated by our producers, you know, but I think going forward in the future, I'd love to incorporate, you know, fans submitting the poems, just getting those back in, you know, the discussion and mix. But, yes, at the top of the show, we open with a poem every time.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, the ABC stations will love it. I know the NBC stations did when they were cited at the top of the show by Perry for whoever put the poem in that was involved with their local station. John, when did you get the sense that the rhythm for Pressure Luck was there, that everything was like coming together, gelling? Did it come from the first episode on? And just curious, when you started taping, what was the audience atmosphere of seeing the show back?
I've never in my 20 years of producing game shows experienced an audience like that, to the point where it was almost too insane. Like, I think on that first tape day in particular, huge fans of the show came out. They wanted to be in the audience for it. So it was an insane, intense feeling. I think Jack had the same thing with Card Sharks. To the point where we had to have Elizabeth was the only person that could really quiet the audience down a little bit because our warm-up, Frank Nicotero, it was very difficult for him to do it. Only she could kind of quiet them when she needed to get answers on whether contestants wanted to pressure lock or pass their spins or what have you. So it's like nothing I've ever seen before, and I just think that is because, you know, this show is so dear to people's hearts, you know, over the last 33, 36 years.
Yeah. And talk about Card Sharks. What was it like that first episode with the audience?
Oh, I think same thing. You know, as John said, you know, we had so many fans of the original that wanted to come and see, you know, probably to come make sure we didn't mess it up. But, you know, they came and they were enthusiastic and they were great. And the elevation, which I know John had too, but, you know, the elements of our game, you know, the questions, people are very into that. And then, of course, when we start flipping cards, the higher or lower the energy grew. And with the, you know, the end game, when people are betting money, you know, and making that decision where, you know, aces are high and twos are the lowest you can get, when, you know, somebody had an ace or a two, you know, our crowd was just tripping over themselves of like, go all in, go all in, go all in. And, you know, our energy just built throughout the taping of the show, whereas you get to that seventh and final card in the end, it was pretty crazy. It was pretty great.
By the way, I've seen clips of both shows. They look terrific. The production value, the enthusiasm, the contestants. It looks like Joel is on top of his game, or is on top of her game. It really looks good. I'm really looking forward to the premiere of both shows back-to-back on Wednesday night. Before both of you go, two-part final question. Where do you think we are at right now in the world of game shows? It seems that we have a nice mix of both new and classic shows running. And secondly, if you could revive a game show of your choice, what game show would you revive? And John, I'll start with you.
Sure. I mean, it is a great place to be. It is a great time to be a game show producer. That is for sure. I mean, with ABC reviving to Tell the Truth, Celebrity Family Feud, Card Sharks, Pressure Luck, Match Game, Pyramid. They've just made a part of their deal. They also stuff with Holy Moly, which is a game. And GSN is more busy than I've seen them in years. I think they have Best Ever Trivia coming out today. They keep releasing new game shows. I just see game now more than I've seen in a long time, which is a wonderful thing. And if I could revive one game show to do, I know it sounds silly, but I would certainly have picked Pressure Luck. It was my favorite show as a kid. It's the show I stayed home from and sick and watched. So the one I would want to redo, we got to do. So I don't think there's another choice for me.
Yeah. And Jack, how about you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously, game shows are doing awesome right now. It's very funny. I've done, you know, game shows for not quite as long as John. He's much older than I am. But, you know, like 12 years of this, you know, like all of a sudden there's a ton of game shows. And then they slow down for a little while and they come up. They go and, you know, like the tide. And I think, you know, in the world we're living in right now, it's a great time to have a programming on that can be catering to adults and kids. Like, families can watch together and everybody can be equally entertained. So I think it's a great time for game shows. And as far as bringing things back, you know, I've got a secret. I think, you know, an updated version of that would be amazing. You know, I stayed home to watch Sale of the Century. I don't know how that would work in today's environment, but those are two that I think would be great.
I agree with you. I think it's time for I've Got a Theory in the Show, and I love Sale of the Century. I like the original version that Jack Kelly did, Maverick Fame with Jack Lennon in D.C., and Joe Letko was followed him, and then, of course, the one that Jim Perry did so well for 6 years. If there's a game show that I grew up with on ABC that I think would be marvelous to revive, it's called Seven Keys. It was done by Jack Nard. It really started as a Los Angeles primetime show 5 nights a week on KTLA. Then, because of the success of that show in prime time, ABC brought on the daytime schedule in 61, kept on until 64, then went back to prime time in L.A. You might call it Shoots and Ladders on television, but it was so well done, and the contestants were fun, and it had a lot of great nuances to it, and you had to win 7 keys in order to be sure that you won the grand prize, which was picked especially for you. I think the show would work beautifully with all the electronics you can do now and video walls. I think it would be a great-looking show, and if you get a host like Jack Nars, I think would be just dynamite. So I'd love to see ABC. Check, by the way, you can see some episodes of Seven Keys on YouTube. So I'd like both of you to check it out. And maybe ABC, bring the show back. It really, I think if it comes back, it would be a winner. And so it would be Pressure Luck
and
Card Sharks. Remember, go ahead.
Yeah, no, sorry, man. I was just going to say I'm started to work on ABC's bringing back Kids Say the Darndest Things with Tiffany Haddish. Very excited about that. Mm-hmm. So ABC's bringing a lot of great stuff back that was awesome, not only our childhood, but, you know, 20 short years ago, too.
Oh, yeah. I think Tiffany Haddish can do a great job with that series. And as I mentioned, we're going to have the executive producer of Holy Moly. I've seen clips of that show. Like I said, whether you've done miniature golf or not, you have never seen a golf course like what everyone went through to put this together. I'm looking forward to hearing what West Denning did with Steph Curry to make it happen. Once again, Pressure Luck, Card Sharks, back-to-back premiere as part of ABC's new Summer Fun Games on a Wednesday night, 8 to 11 p.m. Pressure Luck is on at 8, Card Sharks at 9, Match Game with Al Baldwin, produced here in New York at 10. And they're all Fremantle Media productions, or Fremantle productions, I should say. And by the way, you can catch a sneak preview of Press Your Luck tomorrow night after the Bachelorette. Again, it's all on your local ABC station, so check the local listings from the ABC station in your area. For more details about both programs online, ABC.com and www.fremantle.com. As George Gray would say, a Fremantle presentation. Jack Martin, John Quinn, thank you very much for coming on together. Good luck with these shows, and hopefully, like everything else, some fun and games. Wednesday night could be the beginning of a wonderful long run. It's been a delight having you both on.
Hey, thanks so much for having us, Simon.
You're very welcome, Jack and John. Take care. All the greatest. Jack Martin, John Quinn, joining us live from Los Angeles. Once again, Press Your Luck and Card Sharks, 8 to 10 p.m. Wednesday night. Press Your Luck special sneak preview tomorrow night after the Bachelorette on ABC. When we come back, we have another pair to bring you on tomorrow's televised, but this time, it's not a game. It's a drama. It's a drama based on real life, and it's called Strange Angel. It's very strange, but it's very good. It comes back for second season Thursday on CBS All Access. The creator executive producer Mark Heyman and executive producer David DiGiulio will both join us live from L.A. as we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. And we're simulcast on Spreaker.com and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Don't forget to be tuned to your home for The Stew. Check out Chef Miles Thompson on The Stew. It's good food for your mind and your listening. Weekly, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And don't forget Best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to tomorrow's televised second half hour of our 90-minute Monday edition. Happy to have you with us live from the Web New York, Simon Appleton with you. 54 degrees at the top of the hour. More great guests coming your way in the hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. So do so at 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. You will find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget, later this hour, we have our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. And now we have three prizes in play. Two of them will be supplied by our next guest, who will be coming your way after the top of the hour. One of the more unique shows to come on CBS All Access last year was Strange Angel. It is based on the true story of someone who dabbled in both science and the occult. And is coming back for second season this Thursday. Joining us live from Los Angeles is the creator and executive producer of Strange Angel. He's also the co-writer of the Oscar-winning movie Black Swan. We welcome Mark Heyman. Mark, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Simon.
It is a pleasure. And I believe also joining you as well is another one of the executive producers on your program, David DiGiulio. David, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Yes, hello to both of you. And Mark, we'll start with you. This is based on a true story, a very, very strange but true. You might call it like a Ripley's Believe It or Not tale. How did you find out about Strange Angel and put it to television?
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up in New Mexico to sort of ex-hippie parents who'd been involved in various New Age groups and stuff. And so I had a conversation with my agent many years ago, you know, if he ever ran across anything that took place in some sort of weird esoteric kind of group, that I'd be interested in it. And not long after having that conversation, the producers of this show, Scott Free, sent him this book for my attention. And I had never heard of Jack Parsons prior to reading the biography. But as soon as I started reading it, it was so bizarre because it reminded me so much of stories from my own childhood and even parts of my parents' life that existed before I was born. But it was the 30s and 40s, but the same kind of sort of communal hippie type living, you know, and in New Mexico, of course, we're right next to the Los Alamos Lab. So there's a weird mixture of the Manhattan Project right next to, you know, hippies experimenting with all sorts of drugs and free love and everything. And I found a very similar kind of scene. So it immediately piqued my interest and I dove right in.
Mm-hmm. David, why do you think this series caught a vibe with viewers last year?
I think that when you're looking at the life of a guy like Jack Parsons, it's one of those stories, when you hear about it, you immediately go, how have I not heard this before? He really captures the kind of duality of man. It's a wonderful kind of existential drama. I think Mark's version of these characters that we worked together to craft into these stories, they have a universal quality to them. So even though, as Mark said, it's this incredible, incredibly kind of specific world, you climb into these characters and their emotional journeys, and it's got a lot of accessibility.
And Mark, one thing that I really caught from watching the first episode coming on CBS All Access Thursday called The Fool, which you wrote, is that the main character is like part Tom Swift, if you grew up back reading those books, and part sort of this strange, it's like Doctor Strange, except he's not out to do good. He's out to lead this occult group or cult group in all sorts of weird practices.
Yeah, I agree with that description. I think, you know, he, as a real-life person, but also as a character in the show, I think is someone who, you know, he's a seeker and an adventurer and, you know, always believes in sort of transcending limits and whether that's physically, you know, in the form of a rocket trying to escape Earth's gravity or in more sort of spiritual and carnal pursuits sort of escape the norm. And I think he, you know, in order to get people to come along for the ride, you have to be a talented salesman. And, you know, I think that was a part of his charm, was getting people to believe in these things that were kind of unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Tim, something else about this program is that you get the opportunity to do some social commentary, either about points of history like World War II, our attitude toward the Japanese. And also in this first episode, we also get, I think, a little bit of commentary about the kind of preachers that were heard on radio in the 1940s. Some of you may remember a man by the Father Coughlin, who was one of the most popular, maybe the most popular religious personality on radio in the 30s and 40s. But a lot of people thought that he was a menace to United States freedoms because of his thoughts about various subjects.
Yeah, that's a very esoteric reference you got.
Yeah, but an apt one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely season two is a kind of fascinating look at freedom in the face of fascism. And we don't just play the level of fascism that people know when it comes to World War II. We look for areas where that fascism was in play here in L.A., in Pasadena, where most of the show is set. And certainly... with what you're talking about, you know, the people going after this cult back then had many of their own vices, et cetera, that we get to dive into.
Strange Angel, one of CBS All Access's new hit programs from last year. It is back starting Thursday, and it's available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And we've got the creative executive producer, Mark Haven, if you know the name. He was one of the co-writers of the Oscar-winning movie Black Swan, which he won a Writers Guild and a BAFTA Writing Award nomination for his hand in that screenplay. And we also have one of the other executive producers of the program, David DiGilio. And the program, as I said, runs on CBS All Access. Both of our guests with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on tomorrow will be televised. Simon Applebaum will be live from New York. Glad to be with us this Monday afternoon. A lot of showers going on here as we speak in the New York metro area, 64 degrees at the top of the hour. Any requests or comments for our guests? Don't be shy. Make the call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. When you started putting this program together, Mark, you did, I think, four or five of the scripts of the first season. Did you have a chance to either talk to Parsons' family, or did you have a chance to talk to anybody that knew him?
Not really, actually. I mean, Parsons, you know, he didn't have any kids himself. So he doesn't have any living family to speak of. And almost all of the people in the book who are featured and friends of his and stuff have all passed away, sadly. But we did have the opportunity to speak with even more this season than last season. But George Pendle, who authored the source material, the biography about Parsons, was very much in touch with us. And he had gotten to interview some of the people before they'd passed away. So sort of via him, we got some sort of primary resources and got to look at some of the original love letters that Parsons wrote to his wife and things like that. But unfortunately, we weren't able to speak to anyone directly.
I mean, there was one funny anecdote from last season, which is we went in to talk to a professor who had known this group or known a lot about them back at Caltech when they began. And he was kind of vehemently against the idea of making a show about Jack Parsons. And it helped you realize that this is a guy who clearly pissed a lot of people off, and who a lot of very conservative and down the middle scientists looked at as maybe too much of a maverick. And it's, I think, one of the reasons he's been erased a little bit from the history books, is he definitely disrupted the establishment.
Because of Strange Angel, has there been more of a new interest to find out, besides the book, more interest in about what Parsons' achievements were, and also the seamy side, or the strange side of his life?
I think so. I mean, there's a lot of hardcore, you know, fanatics out there already, which the show has certainly tapped into. And if you look online at various sort of, you know, Facebook groups and stuff, you see that there are a lot of people out there that are already pretty in deep with his story and with his practice called Thelema. But I do think that we're introducing a lot of people who had no idea about his accomplishments, but also the more esoteric sides of his life. And to Aleister Crowley, I think a lot of people aren't super familiar with him. And this season especially goes into Aleister Crowley and some of his peculiarities and deeper into his philosophy. So I would like to think that we're exposing it to a whole new audience. It's certainly fascinating subject matter.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's striking about the program, Mark, is the fact that there is a real sense of achieving balance between the science aspect and historical aspects of the character, but then also this whole cult group that he was involved with and the strange practices they had and where they practiced those practices and so on. And I saw that also in the first episode, too, that there was this sort of going back. There's a lot of counterpoint. Was that deliberate to do scenes that and I saw the in the sort of prelude to the first episode, the last part of that prelude was this counterpoint of here's the rocket going up and here's this woman in this sort of torture kind of practice that was happening. Was that a deliberate thing to do a lot of counterpoint to sort of give you that back and forth of or dual sides of the light?
Very much so. I mean, I think Dave said this earlier, but, you know, I think the core of Jack's character is this dichotomy, sort of split between science and mysticism, but also sort of rational thought and more superstitious or religious thought. And this man who, you know, in our culture now, like, science and religion are seen as very, very separate entities. But I saw Jack Parsons as sort of one of the last of the alchemists, kind of someone who was straddling both those worlds. And when you look back at, you know, even Isaac Newton was also an alchemist. You know, there's a long history of scientists also dabbling in things that are not, strictly speaking, scientific. So, but the show is definitely, you know, I saw it as these two worlds, sort of him trying to exist in both, but that becoming a harder and harder thing to pull off, especially, you know, in the context of World War II and in the context of America sort of drawing sort of firmer lines in the sand between it and its enemies and between appropriate and inappropriate behavior. And as we sort of march towards the Cold War in the 50s, seeing a man who's trying to live multiple worlds and across many different identities and trying to do as he will, that just becomes a harder and harder thing to pull off.
Yeah, I mean, just to jump in real quick, the other thing I'd add in there is that I think it's part of the kind of alchemy of Mark's writing is actually combining the more esoteric sides of the show with the very relatable storylines as well. And in fact, this year we kind of really dive into the love affair of two characters, Rich and Marisol, who we kind of joke are these little pockets of sanity in the midst of the madness of this cult. And you see it all put together, and it really creates this very unique mix that feels utterly original.
David, how long did it take to cast the main roles?
Oh, it took some time, to be fair. It took some time. CBS All Access was a relatively new streaming service, and I think, you know, coming out of the gate, to be honest, they wanted to try to just reach for the stars, literally. And we were going out to just people who have never even thought of doing TV at this point. huge, huge, huge movie stars. And when you go out to people like that, you like taking the big swing, but just the process of that swing can take months to get them to read it and respond. We, Mark and myself, both come out of features before TV, and we were very interested in making a very cinematic show. So for us, we really wanted to make sure we found actors that fit that bill, and we had been tracking Jack Rayner, who was an incredible kind of indie film star out of Ireland. And he had done a little bit of, he had dabbled in the big studio franchises here in America, but we knew that he had that same love of craft that you get with people who come out of features. And so we had to kind of get through the process of going to the crazy A-list names until CBS was comfortable with going to somebody who we knew had the chops and just the real personality to inhabit this guy. And once we did, we were off to the races.
I think, gentlemen, we have a call, and we are going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What's your name, and where are you calling from?
Simon,
go ahead,
this is Stuart Shapiro. If this is Stuart Shapiro.
Yes. Welcome in.
Thank you. I called in a little early.
That's all right. Do you want to ask Mark or David a question, the folks from Strange Angel?
No, actually, because I just came in. So, no, I'm just on hold for when I'm coming on. So, no, sorry for the confusion. Nope. Just happy to listen.
Oh, no problem, Stuart. And we're looking forward to having you at the top of the hour. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, we have our classic trivia question, and you have two special prizes that we're going to be offering with our questions. So we'll have you around for that. I'm looking forward to talking to you about Night Flight and Night Flight Plus, which is the new, not really new, but the 24/7 service that has been doing quite well the last couple of years. So, Stuart, hang in there, and we will get back to
Great.
You after the top of the hour. You got it. All right. David and Mark, really also, you mentioned about both of you, this, I think, your first television series, because both of you come from the world of feature films. What was it like to sort of alter your work style? And for you, Mark, your style of writing, to go from features like Black Swan and Skeleton Twins, which you're also known for, to do a 10-13 episode season and to sort of pace yourself along with other writers, because you wrote four of the key scripts, the first two, the last two, and in this season you've got the first one. What was it like to sort of, you know, handle a different pace, a different, and yet be cinematic?
Well, it was an enormous challenge and learning experience, but ultimately quite thrilling. I think, you know, part of the feature process that I've never loved is, you know, just being alone in a room. And when you run into problems or you have frustrations, it's really just you and your computer, and you're banging your head against your wall, and there's just, you know, no one can save you. I deeply enjoyed being surrounded by fellow writers who, you know, were all as passionate about the material as I am. And that part of the process was very exciting and a fun change from the feature world. The part of TV that I was not fully prepared for is, you know, all the parts of making something happen simultaneously in TV. So in a feature, obviously, you spend a fair amount of time working on the script, but once the script's done, you move into prep and you kind of are prepping it, and there may still be changes to the script that happen, but they're, you know, relatively minor, and you know what the story is and you know what the movie is, and then once you're shooting it, you're just shooting it. You're not doing anything else. And obviously in TV, you know, we were writing, prepping, shooting, and editing simultaneously for, you know, a lot of the time. And having to switch between those roles and sort of maintain your sanity and get at least a few hours of sleep each night was no joke. It's definitely a different world than features.
Yeah, I had done it once before. Back in 2006, I was sitting in Mark's shoes. I had written a feature and then ended up in TV as the creator of a show called Traveler, short-lived show with some great cast, Viola Davis, Matt Bomer, Aaron Stanford. And I had been paired up with a guy who was supposed to be an experienced TV showrunner. And it had been a very difficult process, to be honest. And so I had kind of at that point made it a goal to learn about TV show running and to help first-time creators really navigate the insanity of what Mark just described. Because it is like a pace of work that is pretty unparalleled. You know, I don't know how many people come on and talk about the process, but as a creator showrunner, you're working 100-hour weeks for 4 to 6 months, maybe longer. So it really requires a real belief in yourself, a belief in your vision. And someone like Mark excels at that because he can go right brain, left brain. He can look at the product and the process equally. And you have a lot of people, a great cast that you're dealing with, a great crew that you're dealing with. So there's a lot of man management involved as well. And it's really just a lot of life happens during every season of making a TV show. And I think when you're in a feature mode as a writer, you're very much separated a lot from that. And as a creator showrunner, you're right in the middle of it.
And something else too, David, that you work with in television is you're working with multiple writers and multiple directors, some of which, in the case of directing, you have one director do an episode, and another director does one, maybe another one comes back later in the season and to do it. So how do you navigate that side of things, where you have a stable production crew working on all the episodes, but the directors and the writers change?
Yeah, it's a really interesting part of the process. People inside television will tell you that TV is all about prep. And outside of the business, not a lot of people really get what that means, but as every show is shooting, the next show is prepping. And you have the episodic director come in. They work with Mark and myself through things called tone meetings, through concept meetings, production meetings, to really get inside not just the episode that they're directing, but inside the inside Mark's head, inside the way the cast works, the way our key crew members work. And then you look to your on-set presence. You have an on-set producer. We had a co-EP this year named Sarah Bird, who is our on-set producer. Your ADs, your DPs, to really create continuity for that director who steps in. And ultimately, I will say, you know, we really benefit from having producers like Scott Free, which is Ridley Scott's company, for those who don't know. And our executive producer there, David Zucker, who has so much experience inside the world of TV, that the directors you're getting come with a high taste factor. So you're kind of adapting their taste factor into the language of the show to then execute a consistent product. I mean, I will say I think a lot of directors have fun with this show because our show has such different tones to it. And it can be the challenge of it. In fact, Mark got to direct his first episode this year, episode 3 of season 2. I'll let Mark speak to that a little bit. But we combine different tones in the show, which is pretty rare for TV.
And Mark, as you do, factor in also the work of your director of photography and also the person who's composing your music. I was very impressed, this guy Daniel. I've never heard his music before. I was really impressed with not only in the episode I saw how he was mixing different styles, but at the very end he does this wonderful violin-oriented classical music. It's like you often think, well, you're going to hear the main theme back again, but you hear this wonderful little classical music motif that like gives a very subtle conclusion to the episode.
Yeah, well, Daniel's a genius. We can't say enough good things about him. He came to us through David Lowry, the director who directed our first 2 episodes last season. And Daniel had done all of David's feature work and has moved into TV. We were among one of his first shows, but he's now done a bunch of TV. And he is. He's just a total genius, and we'd love to take full credit for it, but we really can't. You know, we have these wonderful meetings with him where we give him a sense emotionally of what we want the music to do in a given scene, and he continually sort of surprises and amazes us with his choices. And, of course, the challenge of this season is that we asked him to completely change the musical style from the last season. So he'd written an awesome score last season that's actually going to come out as a soundtrack that people will be able to listen to on Spotify and stuff. But we had him, despite how incredible it was, told him that we had to go back to square one and create a whole new sound because the show was existing in a very new space this year. And so I wanted the music to reflect that. And he amazed us once again with a whole new sort of oral landscape.
Yeah.
Daniel Reed?
Hart. Daniel Hart.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of writers listen to your show, and just a shout out to Daniel Hart's music. It's some of the best music to write to that you can find. His score for Lowry's film, A Ghost Story, is incredibly special as well.
Mm-hmm. We feature composers from time to time in this program, and the contribution they make to TV shows, no matter whether it's comedy, drama, whatever, is always tremendous. And it's nice to see that they're getting more attention, both for the theme music, but also for the scores that they do on a weekly basis. What do you hope people? Final question about you. What do you hope people get out of this year? How do you want sort of things to grow in this second season?
Well, I mean, it's certainly much more. It's a bigger landscape of a show. You know, I think this last season was very much about a blue collar worker who had this sort of impossible dream and sort of seeing the sort of germs of that dream start to grow. But this season we had the fun of being able to play in a much bigger sandbox, and it's a bigger and more exciting world he's occupying, and the show itself is bigger and more thrilling and. And the stakes are far higher, and so there's the fun of the show that I hope people get out of it. And then, you know, there are deeper themes at work, which is, you know, when you live in a free country, in a free society, sort of what you want to champion freedom, but then also exploring what happens when freedom runs amok and there's too much freedom, and sort of trying to figure out that balance, which is what the main character is doing. And so hopefully, you know, it's thought-provoking on that front as well.
Yeah, it's a very layered show this season. It's just painted on a huge palette, and the cast especially expands. And each of them is dealing with a very kind of existential crisis. And we should, you know, highlight as well Rupert Friend, who returns as Ernest Donovan. You know, this is a guy who comes back into the show dealing with this kind of manic zealotry that is just fascinating, and you want to know what happened to him. And Bella Heathcote, who is plays Jack Parsons' wife, having this kind of sexual awakening inside this cult that has literally moved into their Pasadena mansion, and the ramifications of that. And you know, characters who were kind of smaller roles last season, like Lainey Neal, who plays Patty. Watching Patty grow up inside this cult and what happens there. All of these things, I think, provide different ways to look at the world and look at these characters that are very, very evolved from season one.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I also want to mention some other members of the cast before we wrap things up on this segment. That's Peter Mark Kendall, and also the person who plays the new character, Alistair Crowley, is played by Angus McAdyan. I hope I have that somewhat pronounced correctly. Got it. Strange Angel, Season 2 premieres Thursday on CBS All Access, available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. For more details about the program online, go to www.cbs.com/all-access. That's a lot. www.cbs.com/all-access. Strange Angel, Season 2, a CBS Television Studios production along with Scott Free Productions and others, premiering Season 2 this Thursday on smart TV sets and smart TV devices near you. Mark Heyman, David Giglio, thank you very much for coming on. Congratulations on the success you've had so far, and hopefully Season 2 approves to more to come and a great long run, too.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Mark and David. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye-bye.
Mark Taylor and David Giglio joining us live in Los Angeles. Strange Angel, Thursday on CBS All Access. When we come back, The man who put together Night Flight in the 1980s, well, Night Flight is now expanded to a full-time service, and you have an opportunity to text that hour to win a trial subscription, or a subscription, I should say, to it. Stuart Shapiro joins me from New York metro area, Shelter Island, to be specific. He comes your way after we pause, after the top of the hour, for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradioandspreaker.com. Together, more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Catch the January Jones Show tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. Hear what success is all about. The January Jones Show tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Don't forget Best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to Lobby Televised on this Monday afternoon, 10th of June 2019. And welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Atman with you live from wherever you are. Raining on and off all day, 64 degrees top of the hour. Another great guest coming away in a half hour ahead. And we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, a phone call from you. So give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number of anywhere, catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. And don't forget, our chat room is still buzzing, and that's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Stuart Shapiro from Night Flight will join us from the New York metro area, but first, some news of quickies. Comedy Central will give its workplace satire Corporate a third and final season next year. New local news channel CBS and Los Angeles starred its smart TV set and plot existence earlier this morning. Adult animation anthology Love, Death, and Robots is set for season two on Netflix next year. Another Netflix note, Gene Davis will be part of Glow's third season starting August 9th. And Amazon is developing a dramedy derived from Sandra Bullock's Years on Campus, with John Legend among the executive producers. And that is news notes for today. In the 1970s and 80s, late-night television was filled with all sorts of wonderful music showcases, hour-long, half-hour-long, 90 minutes long. Think the Midnight Special, In Concert, Don Kirshner's Rock Concert, etc. But for many years, the most unusual, and for many people, the best music showcase of its kind in late night was Night Flight. It was produced for USA Network in the 1980s, and now it is available as a 24/7 subscription programming service available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices known as Night Flight Plus. Joining us live in an internet radio system from Shelter Island, New York, the originator of Night Flight and Night Flight Plus, Stuart Shapiro. Stuart, it's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Simon. Glad to be here. Love your program.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure, Stuart, to have you on. Why do you think Night Flight did so well in the 80s and why it's doing well now as a 24/7 service?
Well, when we first went on the air in 1981, which was actually before MTV, we were really the beacon vision of what everybody's aspirations for cable programming was going to be, which was providing something different, something alternative and not mainstream television. As it turned out, I was had a film distribution company for many years, and I specialized in midnight movies throughout the 1970s with films like Tunnel Vision and The Day the Music Died and Neil Young's Rest Never Sleeps and Jimmy's Plays Berkeley and Song Remains the Same and all these great classic films that we were doing hundreds of movie theaters at midnight around the country throughout the whole 70s. And it became very aware that there was a whole need and a whole hunger for alternative music cult programming that wasn't available anywhere. So when USA Network gave me the opportunity to launch Night Flight with a free palette to put anything that we wanted on, it gave me a wonderful opportunity to acquire and be a destination, both from producers that had great programming that was unable to get on any kind of television, and for people that were really, really hungry. And, you know, outside of New York and Los Angeles, where perhaps you might have been a punk or a new waver or into reggae or into alternative types of cult or music, the rest of the country didn't have the opportunity to really enjoy and be culturized into what was really readily available in the counterculture. And so it really took off immediately and was a life-saving transition. I can't tell you how many times I meet people. The common thread is, I grew up on Night Flight. And one of the kind of funny components is that the Night Flight went on the air at 11 o'clock on Friday night and 11 o'clock on Saturday night and was on till 7 in the morning Eastern time. But for the first few years, USA Network had only one transponder. So it actually went on the air at 8 o'clock in Los Angeles, which was kind of prime time. And then the show repeated itself. So it was a four-hour show that repeated itself. But we had the opportunity to play, everything from films that were French films or silent films or cult films or, from reggae to new wave to punk music, and it wasn't available anywhere else.
And that was the thing about Night Flight, was that it was, among all these shows that showcased music, this was the most eclectic of the bunch, because while Midnight Special and Don Kirshner's Rock Concert and In Concert, many of them played on Friday night, early Saturday morning for different networks. That focused on pop and rock. This was, as you said, the whole spectrum of music, from reggae to world music to punk to soul, rhythm and blues.
Yeah, we even played one of my favorite examples of how much Night Flight stretched out is a Moroccan film called Trances, which was an influential, it was the Djajouka music of Morocco that was actually influential to the Rolling Stones in their early years. And as a matter of fact, many years later, Martin Scorsese, when he started the foundation to preserve movies at the Cannes Film Festival, the first film that he chose was Trances, and he told the story like he came back from the editing room at 3 o'clock in the morning, and here was this completely crazy documentary on, another world class of documentary music that no one in the world would have ever gotten exposure to. And he said, I was watching Night Flight and at 3 a.m. and discovered this wonderful film. So, it was It dared to be different. It still dares to be different, and it's really an important, in a way, Night Flight is like a museum and a library at the same time, where you can actually really discover and go deep into a wide range of music and cultural items. I mean, we were the first. Nobody had ever played like video art from Nan June Pike and John Sanborn and the leaders of the early ages of which today is museum quality. Nan June is in the Museum of Modern Art, and I actually produced at one time the Jimi Hendrix videogram, where I got 8 Jimi Hendrix tracks and gave them to 8 different video artists to do really avant-garde video. So, and even today that was, would be over the top, but not over the top from a programming perspective, It's funny how OTT or over the top has got two different kinds of sensibilities to it.
Yeah. What were the circumstances that led to USA canceling Night Flight? And between that and a few years ago when Night Flight Plus finally came on as a smart TV set device service, how many times did you think, I've got to bring this back? There's got to be some way that I've got to bring this back on some network in some manner.
Well, it's a great question. So when we started Night Flight in 1981, myself having been a film distributor, quasi producer, independent, in those days, if you were a film distributor, you were sort of a producer, even though you didn't originate your projects. A lot of filmmakers would come with a half-finished film, and we would provide them post-production financing and distribution. At that time, I knew there was plenty of content available, and USA Network was really kind of unwilling to give us any money for our programming. So we made a 50-50 split on advertising revenue, which became the model. Now, when we started Night Flight, I always tell this, so we were in only 700,000 cable homes because it was actually technically Madison Square Garden Network before they changed their name about a month after we started. And they only launched with the cable systems that were in the metropolitan area of New York to start off with. So we had probably like getting like $300 for a 30-second TV spot, but we had to play it probably six times to get the $300 because, you know, it really wasn't worth anything. So in a similar way, if you look at streaming today and AVOD today, it's almost 40 years, you know, the same cycle where, you know, you're trying to figure out or you're trying to get revenue from views out of advertising, CPMs and stuff. So we were similar. So what happened, though, was Night Flight became more and more popular. It was actually probably the highest rated late night show, and ratings went late at night. And then we got, because it had a youthful, eclectic audience, we had Pepsi and we had Coke, we had Miller Beer and we had Wrigley Spearmint Gum, and we had like great, great advertisers. And then by the end, and I think, you know, maybe 1986, USA Network was in 40 million homes, and they felt it was too lucrative of a split with us and that they could do it on their own. So after 1988, they canceled Night Flight and they replaced it with their own kind of quasi-cheap version of Night Flight that really didn't have any inspiration or any creative beacon juice, so to speak. You know, it was up all night. It was with Rhonda Shearer. It was kind of like a cheap rendition of, not even a rendition of Night Flight, but their own version. So, you know, it was just, you know, ran its way. So then Night Flight went into syndication for many years, quite successfully throughout the 90s, maybe 93 or so. I separated from my partner for many, many years. And then through serendipity, I had the opportunity to reassociate myself with the library. And I actually purchased the entire library now going back 10 years ago, exactly 2008. And obviously at that time, it was always my dream and always my vision that Night Flight should be its own network. It was, and then, you know, back then, 10 years ago, it was like, you know, $200 for a 10 gigabyte hard drive. So conversion to digital and OTT streaming was really just a fantasy, or, you know, a multi-million dollar investment that really wasn't the opportunity for independents to be able to build their own network. So basically about 3 years ago, 3 to 4 years ago, the technology changed so that an independent producer distributor could have their own network, because the content management systems and the streaming technology that were provided by a handful of startup companies, and particularly Zeit, who has been my partner, my streaming technology back end since we started, made it available from a decent amount of investment to be able to have our own network. So then, you know, add that to Roku starts, to the fact that you could actually have nightflightplus.com as just an internet play with a cart system and a play system. And voila, you know, there's no difference between you and any other of the majors. The only thing that separates you is your content. And thank God my content separates myself from everybody, because our content is unique and different no matter who's out there and how much money they may have. So it's, you know, it was a wonderful wave. I like to say, you know, the good guys win in the end if you can live long enough. So I've been lucky to have a useful late renewal. And Night Flight, you know, it's the thing that's wonderful about Night Flight being on the air now, or you call it on the air, but we'll call it on the streaming on demand on wherever you may want to find it, is that the discovery of it from all these millions of were kids, it's sort of now a nostalgia hit in some ways, where they really are. Lots of people watch some of the original shows, even with the commercials in them, and it brings them back to another day. But also, this whole concept of nostalgia has really been vaporized in a wonderful way with Night Flight being able to play old shows and old music videos and have all this new stuff as well that's coming out every week. So we're pretty lucky. And, you know, all of us, and of course, you know, your show's devoted to this. It's really a new world of programming and a new technology that's allowed the independent spirit to rise as strong as a major spirit.
And fact, Stuart, you're the latest one of those independently made networks that is using smart TV sets and smart TV devices to get to the viewer, either as the main way or the exclusive way. In the last 18 months, we have probably had something like 15, 16 services. And it's interesting that you were one of the first to do it at a time when people did not know that this was happening. But now a lot of folks, from PassionFlix to AfroLife.tv to Blueprint from NBC Universal, Stage Network, et cetera, are doing this. We're speaking with Stuart Shapiro. He was the man that put Night Flight on the map, and now he's got Night Flight Plus, and they have smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and he's going to have a brand new book called Identify Yourself. And coming up in our Cracker Trivia Question segment, you're going to get an opportunity to get a subscription to Night Flight Plus and the book, too. Stuart joins live with Showtime in New York this half hour on Tamabi Tola. Some of that will be live from New Weather, New York. Question or comment for Stuart, give us the ring, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple0418. Roughly, how many people now subscribe to Night Flight Plus? And what are some of the features beyond getting the original material from the 80s?
Many thousands of people are subscribing. It's also native on Roku, and that's been growing monthly. We've adhered to the same programming metaphor that we had Night Flight. So every single Friday night, we put up at least three, sometimes four new shows, and they're a mixture of documentary movies or cult films or old retro horror films and original episodes from Night Flight. So the one thing that's wonderful is we're really devoted to keeping fresh content every Friday night, and it's not like just some kind of, it's stuff that you can't get anywhere and you never see it anywhere. And you know, and it gives you an opportunity to see, you know, unique programming, particularly if you have a countercultural sensibility. So like this, you know, this weekend or new arrivals, we have Bad Religion, a great punk band from the 70s, from the 80s, Johnny Thunders, Lost in France, you know, and there's like essential stuff from Bowie to Metallica, you know, to Dylan's. There's all kinds of, there's just a wonderful mix of music and cultural films.
How much, by the way, is the subscription? And also, has there been any thought about commissioning original material at some point?
It's $4.99 a month or $39 for an annual. So the annual subscription, which quite a few of our subscribers go for, is really a great deal. I didn't quite get your second part of your question was?
Any thoughts about commissioning original material from independent producers or from other sources in terms of new content, especially for Night Flight?
Well, not at this point. I mean, in a way, a lot of the material that comes out on Night Flight is original, but we're not commissioning it. Neither do we kind of have to. Because there is such a great flow of unique independent content that's out there and doesn't have available platforms to put them out that you would expect them to find them. What I am doing that is original, though, is like, for instance, this past year, IFC Cable Network has ordered 18 episodes. They were short episodes of Night Flight. Unfortunately, for most of my fans, they were only a 15-minute, but they were really very tightly edited packs. They're almost like a sizzle reel of segments, but they've been running on Friday nights on IFC for the whole year, and we produce those. So what I do produce is new compilation material of the old and the new, because I think conceptually, I think that people, you know, we all experience going to an OTT channel, wanting to watch something. You spend 5 or 10 minutes, you know, going around looking this, looking that, and you know, kind of get lost. You don't really know what you necessarily want. But so I think that what we're leaning to now is to produce 1-hour to 2-hour sort of the way Night Flight used to run, where it would have several different segments plus a feature film. So you would actually be able to kind of, it's more of the streaming concept. So I'm introducing Night Flight Stream as an additional ability to be fed instead of deciding what. So on Friday nights soon, there'll be a 1.5-hour, 2-hour program stitched together that may have a variety of different components and a feature film. And it'll be more of a streaming sensibility than deciding whether or not, you know, I want to watch Tom Petty or Metallica or what segment, you know, so you can actually just watch. Because I think that the general public wants to be able to have both being fed, like you're turning on an FM radio station, and then the VOD, like you're really deciding what you want to watch.
Let's give our audience the opportunity now to win a subscription to Night Flight Plus and a copy of Stewart's book, Identify Yourself, plus a notepad from Talaria. That's our three prizes in play with our Clapper Trivia Question of the Week. Here's the question. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. We're going for our second winner in the last 3 weeks. Here's the question. Actor Ree Hadley was the star of a pair of half-hour crime dramas that ran on network television from 1950 to 1955. Name both of them. Actor Reed Hadley starred in a pair of half-hour crime dramas. They ran from 1950 to 1955 on network television. Name both of them. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full mailing address. If you're the first correct answer, you will win the Stewart Shapiro book, Identify Yourself, a subscription to Night Flight Plus, and the notepad from Talaria. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. And if you missed the question just now, we'll post it tomorrow morning on Facebook, also on Twitter, at UBC Simon TWBT. The UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so. And all the very best. And Stuart, thank you for donating the prizes. We really appreciate it. And again, those prizes are Identify Yourself, your new book, and Night Flight Plus.
So just remember, Identify Yourself, it has an I on identify, not a Y. It was sort of like Wi-Fi and the other I, so I did a twist on identify. So if you're looking for it on Amazon, it's identify, and you usually probably have to put my name in it. But it's a really cool book. It's very personal experiences. The subtitle of it is It's a Journey in FU Creative Courage. So I wrote it for all of probably everybody that listens to your show to have a boost in creative courage, to be able to realize that it's an up and down world and you get rejected a lot and you lose a lot and you don't necessarily win that much. But out of every loss and out of every rejection is the seed of your next creative energy. So it's really a informative personal journey to give anyone that reads it a boost in their creative courage, which we all need all the time.
And again, the book is called Identify with the I Yourself, and the service is Night Flight Plus. If you never saw Night Flight in the 1980s, you're in for a marvelous musical and entertainment treat. And you can find it 24/7 on smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place. For more details about the program online, the service online too, www.nightflightplus.com. It's www.nightflightplus.com. And again, one of our prizes in our question questions week is a subscription to Night Flight Plus. Stewart Shapiro from Night Flight, thank you again for being with us. Pleasure to have you on. Congratulations on how Night Flight Plus is going, and hopefully continued success, a wonderful long run, and we'd love to have you back anytime.
Thank you very much. Happy to give you some annual subscriptions to give away in the future too, Simon. Keep up the good work. Great show. Glad you're promoting all these great independent stuff. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. You're very welcome, Stuart. A pleasure. You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Stuart Shapiro from Ranked Fight Plus joining us live from Shelter Island, New York. We'll tell you more about what's coming up on the Lobby Televised, but first, quickly, some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. You heard about Great Omens? That's the brand new Amazon series based on the terrific book by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. Well, you can now get the original book in audio form to trial run with Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 80,000 titles to choose from, including the growing number of Audible originals. It's everything from original audio productions, off-Broadway and Broadway shows, one woman, one man shows, regional theater too, and it's all available for you. You can listen to these products on any device, wherever you're hearing us on right now, on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. All you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. 3 free audio books, 2 audio originals, and a 1-month trial. And great customer service for the fine folks at audibletrial.amazon.com. So once again, just go to audibletrial.com/televised and sign up for that 1-month trial. Hear for yourself why Audible transformed the way you hear the world. We have a wonderful show today. I want to again thank all of our guests from Press Your Luck and Card Sharks, John Quinn and Jack Martin. Don't forget that series, both series run back to back Wednesday night, 8-10 p.m. starting this Wednesday on ABC. And also Mark Heyman and David DiGiulio from Strange Angel, season 2 premiering Thursday on CBS All Access. And again, Stuart Shapiro from Night Flight Plus. Coming Friday on Tomorrow We Tell Live, another ABC game show coming up this year. Holy moly, from Steph Curry. We've got the key executive producer working with Steph. Wes Denning will be with us. And former cable system operator, now the head of a company called Pantera, Michael Wilner, will be with us. We'll get his thoughts about how he's working with the cable industry these days and about TV overall. If you came in late on today's program or want to catch up on episodes you missed, make it very easy for you. Go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Remember, our podcasts are available 24/7 at iTunes, on Apple TV, Spreaker's podcast app, and, of course, the iHeartRadio podcast network. Just go to iHeartRadio.com. Put Tomorrow Will Be Televised in the search bar. Click, and you're right in. Love to hear what you thought about today's program and your general thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name where you're emailing from. That's how you get involved in our Craps Trivia Question of the Week. Also, we have a regular feature show to know. Is the TV show you like? Does there's more attention it's getting? Let me know. We'll give it the attention, and you defend alongside. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. You'll also find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, at UBCSimonDWBT. We love hearing from you, because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not those of Block Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. At BTR, Production Associates Candace Williams, Andy Toes, Block Talk Radio's General Manager, Jay Sonberg, Executive Content Producer, and the co-founders, Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Tell Live is brought today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For that free audio books, the 1-month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. Simple as that. But Tomorrow We Tell Live, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your week. We are back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Box Up Radio Speaker and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to the rest of today this week, please make it safe and make it great. And as always, until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.